Palmetto Mornings on WRHI.
Well, you can hear me on the radio. You want to turn me on, turn on your stereo. You can sing along while they're playing our song. Have you done me wrong, baby? Crank it up until you blow the speakers out your Chevy truck. So listen, Romeo, when you're feeling kind of low, let me tell you where to go. Turn on the radio.
Good Wednesday morning. It's 7:41, 59 degrees right here on Palmetto Mornings on WRHIFM 100.1, your home for news, talk, and sports. I'm Patty Mercer. Lucas McFadden has the day off. Well-deserved. And if you want to watch us, though, you can still tune in because our guests are really cool and fun. And, of course, believe it or not, when I tell you what our next guest does, you'll be like, what, Patty? But you know what? You can have fun and you can still have a very important role in our community, job to do. And of course, Sabrina Gast, many of you are very familiar with this name as we read a lot in the news and on the radio, but she is the York County coroner. So good morning, Sabrina Gast.
Good morning, Patty.
Thank you for joining us this morning. You know, one of the things that we have been seeing so much in national headlines, of course, is Gabby Petito, who went on what looked like just a fun, exciting road trip with her boyfriend, fiance, and even posting. I mean, I think she's got tons of followers on Instagram, so it looked just like an excellent time, a perfect life. And now we have a situation where murder or potential homicide, I guess, I don't know the proper technology, but, and he's missing. So yesterday it was reported that her death cause was strangulation. So I wanted to just ask you, in an investigation like this, why did it take so long for the cause of death to be revealed to the public?
Well, if you remember when they first found her, they actually did say that it was a homicide. So that leads me to believe that they saw things on her immediately that would indicate that somebody had done some harm to her. The actual cause of death does take a while. You know, they had the forensic pathologist, they had a forensic anthropologist, they had to wait on the toxicology testing. So those things take a while. So you, when we have someone, a person that dies, you, and they have had, or they're going to get an autopsy, that pathologist is looking not only at the body itself, but they're going to take tissue samples. They're going to look at microscopy, histology, all of those things that take time for stains, whatnot. The anthropologist is looking for injuries or trauma to the bone structure of the decedent. And toxicology analysis takes a while. Here locally, if we send it to a private lab, which means that I actually pay for that analysis, it takes about 4 to 5 weeks for us to get those results back. So it takes a little while for us to get all of that together. And it sounds like that coroner is kind of like me. He wants to make sure that he has all of his information prior to releasing anything. And then also you'll also have to take into account that they're going to talk to the family before they release anything to the media. So that family deserves that first information. Give them a little bit of time to digest that before it's actually released into the public.
You know, that's good to know because we do get impatient. But when you see the steps and you really go, oh, because you're right, there's no margin for messing up here. And it's also very critical that any evidence is protected and not destroyed in the process of removal or anything like that. Domestic violence. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And strangulation is, unfortunately, it seems to be something that you see happen in cases of domestic violence. So how delicate, just help us all, how delicate is something around your neck?
It does not take much to strangle someone. It takes about 3 to 5 pounds of pressure, because what you're doing is you're actually occluding the vessels in the neck structure, and you're keeping the blood flow either from the brain or coming back from the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, a person can lose consciousness in about 5 to 8 seconds. And then if the pressure continues, then it will actually precede to death.
5 to 8 seconds.
Wow. It does not take long at all.
I grew up, my dad was like, never let anybody put anything around your neck. You know, and now you read things, you know, just for recreational fun, people will try to do certain things because it's fun to pass out. But mm-hmm. I've also read that even if it doesn't show damage in the moment, mm-hmm. it can have a delayed.
It can. Well, if you think about what you're doing, you're actually compressing those vessels in the neck. So you can cause trauma to the neck structures or the vessels, which can cause blood clots that can form there where the trauma is, and then they can break loose, and you can have strokes. You can have you can have trouble with your speech if they've compressed the larynx or your voice box. If they've broken the hyoid bone, you hear a lot about a hyoid bone in strangulation. It sits right above your vocal cords. And it's a kind of a U-shaped bone that kind of free-form sits there. And if there's enough manual pressure to break that bone, then you have trauma at that area. And that can have, you can have swelling 24 or 48 hours later, which obstructs the airway. There's new national standards now that if someone comes into an emergency department and they have a history of strangulation, that they should have a CT scan, because that's the only way that you can detect injuries to the hyoid bone. They need to make sure that they're not discharged alone, so that somebody is there to be with them in case they start having difficulty breathing. There's a lot of new advances we've come a long way
mm-hmm.
As far as strangulation. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of times the victims, when they come forward, they don't disclose that they've been strangled. So that's always very distinct questions that should be asked if they're coming into an emergency department, or for that matter, if just law enforcement is on scene and they don't want to go to the hospital for evaluation. You know, law enforcement should be asking those questions to make sure that if that event did occur, then they can seek medical care for them, so that they're not a statistic of domestic violence homicide.
Absolutely. Another thing that we see a lot is accidental overdose of prescription medicine. Mm-hmm. How do you determine what's accidental and what is suicide?
So it's usually the events leading up to that overdose. What we're seeing more is not actually prescribed drugs from physicians, but drugs that they're getting off the street. We have a lot of fentanyl overdoses, and it's street fentanyl. It's coming in, and they're pressing it into pills, and the dealers are selling them on the street. So that's what we're seeing the most of at this point. And, you know, it's the circumstances leading up to that overdose. A lot of times, you know, if you don't have a past history of suicide attempts, suicidal ideations, they haven't verbalized suicide to anybody, you know, and they have a drug history, so that we look at a lot of different things. Sometimes it's really hard to determine between suicide or accidental overdose, but for the most part, most of our overdoses here in York County are accidental overdoses, where they think that they're getting a certain drug that they're purchasing off the street, and that drug is actually laced with something that's a lot stronger, fentanyl in the cases that we're seeing.
But again, if you're buying something illegal, you don't have any protection to guarantee you're actually buying what you think.
There's no way of knowing whether you're actually getting the hydrocodones or the oxycodones that you're asking for. And what we're finding is that they're actually getting pills that are made by the dealers. They're pressed pills, and it actually has the fentanyl in it. And there's no control over that. There's no, you know, they don't care how much fentanyl they put in each pill, or, you know, it's just kind of willy-nilly mixed and put together in a pill form, and then they sell them out on the streets.
It's very, very frightening. But it's interesting how close you work with law enforcement. I mean, you guys really are a team. If there's an accident, everyone shows up, and you bring your expertise, and we appreciate it so much. You're such a you know, you're a fun person. And we tend to think a coroner dealing in what you deal with every day. And yet you have the ability to use your knowledge and understand that it's a vital piece of actually serving. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. We're very fortunate in York County. We get along very well with law enforcement agencies. You go to some other communities in this state in particular, you can go to some other communities where law enforcement and the coroner are at odds with each other. And that doesn't benefit anybody. So we're very fortunate that we work well with all the agencies within York County, and everybody respects everybody's role, and we know what we need to do, and we work well together.
You'll have to come back and talk some more. I mean, it's so fascinating. And we love CSI and all those shows. So, hey.